The following Dharma talk was given by Ron Hogan Green. Hogan Sensei is a lay teacher in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org.
Thanks for listening.
Good afternoon. On the great road of Buddha ancestors, there is always unsurpassable practice, continuous and sustained. It forms the circle of the way, and it is never cut off. Between aspiration, practice, enlightenment, and nirvana, there is not a moment's gap. Continuous practice is the circle of the way. This being so, continuous practice is unstained, not forced by you or others. The power of this continuous practice confirms you as well as others. It means your practice affects the entire earth, the entire sky, in the 10 directions. Although not noticed by others or by you, it is so. This is the opening of Dogen's fascicle on Gyoji, on continuous practice or sustained practice, or another way to think about it is intentional practice. An intriguing aspect of dukkha is that it promotes a raw honesty if we allow ourselves to deeply feel it beyond our insistence on ending or avoiding our suffering. I know when I feel the most acute pain, the most suffering, it deeply concentrates me and centers me in a way that I might not easily access under more comfortable and, quote, favorable conditions. When we thoroughly acknowledge our dissatisfaction and alienation in a given situation, we can be profoundly and painfully willing to let go of our habitual reactions to what makes us uncomfortable or fearful. Interestingly, although we may recognize that our ways of avoidance do not ultimately help us, it is not easy, as we all know, to let them go. To let go of our safety net, the way that we habitually hide from ourselves, perhaps. Is the entrance to a loving and generous compassion to ourselves and others, to let go. This is the ongoing continuous practice. On the great road of Buddha ancestors, there is always unsurpassable continuous practice, continuous and sustained. This is the invitation to practice that is before us. In doing sesshin practice, or other long sittings, other long forms of continuous practice, we travel on this great road of Buddha ancestors, where just as they did, we encounter our own minds, with our foolishnesses, our obsessions, and in one manner or another, our self-limited and defined places we tend to live out of, sometimes not even visible to us. It's so habitual, just the water we swim in, except that gets reflected back to us in how we live our life, sometimes just as a subtle undercurrent of disease and dissatisfaction, sometimes as obvious pain. Those who have traveled the great road of Buddha ancestors have encountered precisely what we are encountering in our practice. They have practiced in a continuous and sustained way, precisely as we practice, to the best of our ability. We practice now on that great road so that we can be the ancestors for those who follow us. On the road, we can encounter our mind in action and study it, becoming aware of our thought processes with a clarity that's much more difficult to appreciate without practicing together. So practicing together offers us an encouragement with each other as we offer that encouragement to each other, and allows us to see again in a way that would be difficult for us to see just sitting in a lonely apartment or house, perhaps a cave, without an immediate sangha. When I say together, it is not just those of us in this great room or those of us sitting at home, but we are practicing with all of those who have ever practiced in the timeless past and the timeless future. It's not that we are just connected. We are on this road together. All of us, past, present, and future. And yet at times we may feel helpless and lost, and in other times the path before us opens up and we see light. We see the freedom and open space, which we know has always been there, but can be obscured and hard to find our way when we try and grasp it, reach for it. Yet Dogen says that on this road we are all practicing the road of our Buddha ancestors. There is always unsurpassable practice. The practice you are doing is unsurpassable practice. Always continuous and sustained. Always. Consider that our practice is always there, continuous and sustained. Can we consider that this road that you and I are on is our practice? To journey with faith and trust in the three treasures as your own treasures, as your own journey within this vast great realm of this practice. If, as Master Dogen points out, the road is always present, always before us, how does it become our road? Yours, mine, intentionally and specifically designed, if you will, for your life. How does it fit? Because it fits so perfectly for you. It's essential to see what helps you in this practice and in your life, to really discern what is helpful and what is not helpful. in our actions, in how we think about things. I just always recall Shugan Roshi being asked a question and saying, is that a helpful question to ask? Are we stuck someplace in our mind that we're kind of drilling into a question that doesn't help us spend our time and energy? Or are there helpful questions? There's a thin line between, I cannot face this at this time, which needs to be honored, and doing your best to go into what we are facing at this time. When we do this with an intention, a clear intention, our practice becomes intentional. The intention clarifies our lives. And it arises in our faith of what we've already encountered before as our own experience. And that may not be so easy to put in a box and define, so we can grasp it in a thought. It's deeper than that. It's more subtle than that, more profound than that. And perhaps outside of this practice, we're not very well trained to attune to that. I was reading an article that suggested that we live in this society which is designed to take the most precious thing that you have as a human being, your attention, your awareness, and put it out there. And the article compared it to gluttony, that as we go through our life and are exposed, if you will, expose ourselves, if you will, to what is out there, it's just like an endless feast that we keep stuffing ourselves with our attention to things outside us that pull us away from any sense of clarity and a noetic sense of true honesty and self-integrity. And in a way, our society is designed that way. Our politics is designed that way. Our entertainment. It's almost amusing when you open a web page. So you're looking for information, let's say, and there's a pop-up right on the edge, but you can't quite read the information that you're looking for. So you exit out, and there's another pop-up, and it's designed. And that pop-up may be based on other information from you being on the web. So it's alluring. I was looking for water faucets, not the kind you can get, a specific kind of water faucet for where I live, and you can't get it at Lowe's, or you have to do a deep search. And endlessly, there's pop-ups. Here's another set of water faucets for you, brought to you by Amazon or whatever. It just keeps happening. And I look at Aho, my wife, and she says, forget that, we're not interested in that crap. You know, we're looking for da-da-da-da-da. This isn't helpful, but it's, in its own way, can be seducing. When we practice with intention, deliberately, the path opens before us, and it's wide and spacious. It's really simple because we understand that we can direct our lives now in a way that makes sense to us, that fits, and has always been present as a trustworthy foundation. And your life changes when that happens. When you're on this path and you realize you can turn everything towards the path and you can trust that. And the results may or may not feel good in any given time because we live in a relative world. And yet that too is trustworthy. And we could turn that to the path. And in doing so, we're moving towards a fundamental and vast responsibility. A responsibility for our lives. We can now own our life. And so all these other influencers and influences that are sneaking into our life are disempowered because we can recognize them as not helpful or perhaps helpful. And in walking on this path and in stepping into the responsibility for our life, it extends from my life to yours and your life to mine, because we deeply affect each other. And it's not just you or just me. We're entwined on this path. We are all walking the path together. To study and practice the Buddha's way is to study and practice one's whole life, within one's whole life is all of you. So although we're sitting here right now, at this moment, a whole life is contained in this moment. A whole life has brought us here. And not only that, a whole life in the future is contained in this moment, with all of the infinite possibilities. Monday morning, I went for a walk down Miller Road with a student, and we walked together. I invited him to walk with me. And as we walked, I've been walking up and down that road for decades, and so many things have happened. I can recall a wild party that happened at that house, a Sangha party that I'm not going to share the details with, but some of you may recall a wild party or two from ancient days, or the people who've been there, some sick, some dying, some younger, or many other stories that I was sharing, the half-secret garden, which if you go into is an art garden and a place to sit zazen. And I was wondering, is it still being taken care of? Yes, it is. And after I got back, I suddenly realized a remembrance from when I was the age of that student. And Roshi Kaplow, my first teacher in Rochester, New York, invited me to go for a walk. So I was the age of that student at that time now, then. And now I'm Roshi Kaplow's age. At that time we went for a walk. And he was very amused at me because I was young and vigorous and strong and worried about him as we kind of took a course through the streets of Rochester. And did he know where he was going, or will he trip and fall? And it was a long walk. And he's seeing all this. I can see it. And at one point, he kind of says, come on, we're going to go over here. And we come to a median strip between, in a street between two sets of private homes. And he says, there, look at that. And there's a stone. And it's this, on the stone is engraved, here lies Zen. And he looks at me and he's quite amused. And he says, it's a dog. Someone buried their dog, and the dog was named Zen. Oh, Roshi. And here, in this walk on Mill Road, 40 years later, the same thing's happening. Exactly the same thing in its own way. And that's the perspective that this practice brings us as we walk this road together. And on this road, we realize most personally that there are no barriers to one's life and no barriers to our realization. We walk the road. This is the great road of Buddha's ancestors. Many practitioners from many cultures and different times have pointed out the road and walked it so that we can walk it as well. They have done so for you and for me. It forms the circle of the way and is never cut off. How could it be cut off? Walking on this road, we begin to realize that our lives are thoroughly interwoven with this path. And nothing in our life, absolutely nothing, exists apart from it when we walk that road. When we make the road our life, the distinction between formal practice, practice here, and living our ordinary, everyday life, entwine and become a continuous journey. And we're exploring that. We're exploring, is there a difference? Is there not a difference? Although we may feel this connection to this road more intimately in these particular circumstances, and sometimes more than others. Yet also perhaps you've had the experience that not in the circumstances, but in home or work, we suddenly became completely intimate with the road, with what's going on in you or with you and others, which really is the same thing. Think about our mind of Zazen. It's really the same as our life. Seeing here the habitual patterns that we repeat regularly, and we can see how these patterns can be so tender and painful. And in seeing it, an option opens to respond in a new and fresh way. And we can study this and see this no matter where we are. It's easier, quote unquote. Although, isn't it interesting how often we arrive here and what do we run into? Ourself. We throw up confusion, tiredness, sleepiness, too much energy, not enough energy, the food isn't right, my legs fall asleep. And yet everything is being offered to us. And everything is also being offered to us outside this room. So as we study ourselves and our minds, be it here or elsewhere, and see opportunities before us to practice and to live in a new way, a different way, a fresh way. We know the old way and where that leads. And so, do we wish to go in another direction? And this is the wonder and power of practice. Even if you say no and come up with a rationalization that no, I don't, knowing that there's suffering in your life or difficulty or barriers, even if we say no, if we continue to practice, there'll be more opportunities to kind of open the space. Even a little is a lot sometimes. And so it's ours to choose which way to go. No one else but you can choose. That is the wonder and power of this practice, that you choose, which is also can be scary. I mean, me? I want someone to rescue me. I want someone else. I'll call it the practice to rescue me. But the practice is not going to rescue you. There's only one person who can rescue you from your suffering. Moi. That's it. Usually I say moi as Miss Piggy would say. Do we know who Miss Piggy is? So we can zone out to neutral thoughts, safe thoughts, or dullness that we're cultivating in the name of safety. And yet on this road of ceaseless practice, there will come, as you continue to walk, at points at which we're not so caught up in pursuing or avoiding pleasant thoughts or unpleasant ways of thinking. That point will come, does come, repeatedly. And so as we sit, we begin to see the possibilities through ongoing practice and explore the possibilities of letting go of our familiar harm that we're so habituated to. And this is the path of ceaseless practice. This is the point. It's not a matter that I was lost before, but now I'm on this wonderful road. It's all road. And we are increasingly willing to encourage our journey on this road as our own. We can see that it has always been there before us. This is the mind of Zazen. Dogen says, it is that sustained effort that forms the circle of the way and ensures it is never cut off. So Dogen speaks of this as a circle. It's a circle simply because it does not travel from point A to point B. We're here. We're always here. Where are we going? The circle is full. Nothing is outside it. Practice is the circle. You are the circle. We're not going anywhere in the sense of moving between these different places. We're in this vast circle of an unending practice as our life, with nothing excluded. No event, no occurrence is apart from this. Your arms and heart are wide open, large enough to hold it all. You are large enough to hold it all. Mu is the circle. Breath is the circle. Shikantaza, just sitting, is the circle. Each step along the way is this circle. From this perspective, you cannot get lost. No matter what happens, you can't get lost. Imagine living out of that confidence, that no matter what happens, you can't get lost. You were trying so hard to be safe before, but you've actually always been safe without the trying so hard. Straight ahead, each breath, each thought, each no thought, straight ahead runs the way as you step. Yet, who is taking that step? Who is that one? Are you someone or something else while taking that step, while taking this breath? Are you adding a head on top of your head? As we walk in the circle, we're always returning home. Leaving home with each step and returning home with the same step. Between aspiration, practice, enlightenment, and nirvana, there is not a moment's gap. Continuous practice is the circle of the way. Right here, in this statement of Dogen, is the Buddha's original proclamation. I and all beings are at once awake, have always been awake, a whole and complete from the beginning. Though this is so, it has to be made our own. It has to be realized. And realization is not a thing. It's not, oh, now I'm realized, end of story. We're doing it now. On your cushion, on your seat. You're realizing the way. Ordinarily, we approach practice from some sense of lack, from our suffering and others' suffering, to a sense that we're missing our life as we live. So we take up practice. Perhaps we encounter the aha moment and get turned on by this practice. This is the way I've been looking for. Great. Here it is. I just go. So out of our aspiration to address what we are trying to address, we start. We practice. We cultivate the understanding and the clarity. We cultivate the insight into our being. And as we continue, our life reflects this practice as compassion, as wisdom. Small bites, but as we go on, it grows. It gets larger. So this narrative is okay as far as it goes. But as we deepen, we begin to see and realize that this is too small a frame to hold what our practice truly rests on. In a subtle way, it's too self-referential. When Dogen says between aspiration, practice, enlightenment, and nirvana, there's not a moment's gap, what is he showing us? Not a moment's gap, no gaps. What is he pointing at? All the steps of our practice realization are present from the very beginning. They're all there. They've always been there. You don't have to go anyplace. It's always right here. Early on, we may not see it this way. Yet aspiration and practice, enlightenment and nirvana are present from the very beginning. That's what the Buddha saw. That's what so many people have seen. And right now, as you practice, that is true for you as well, and me. And that takes us to the question, because it has to be realized. Will you have the profound faith to practice wholeheartedly, to give it all that you can give it? Will you trust yourself enough to give it your all? Not as some measurement of your effort, that's important, but instead as just doing your very best without getting caught up in success or failure. Just doing your very best to take up your practice, to investigate your practice, to go deeply within it. And when it is not wholehearted, to practice that. So isn't that wonderful? You practice wholeheartedly, and sometimes you realize it's not quite my best. You practice that. What does that mean to practice that? Does it mean to rev up the motor? Does it mean to let go of the motor? What does it mean? For each of us, it means a particular way of practicing that is yours, uniquely yours, that you have to see into. So this is not an accomplishment. It's a cultivation of what is already there. So the practice is not lodged in our measurement of success and failure. It rests in the poco y poco study of our emotions and customary responses to our activities, to our relationships. And from this study, we can come forth with an open heart under all sorts of different circumstances, some of which we never thought we could, and we can. And this is practice realization. This is it. And it originates and rests in the cultivation of the vastness of silence in Zazen. It rests in what you are doing here and continues in the moment-to-moment nonstop flow of our breath and of our lives, of the moment-to-moment breath, just the breath, and our whole life as a single thing. So Dogen says, continuous practice is the circle of the way. This being so, continuous practice is undivided and not forced by you or others. This being so, continuous practice is unstained. You can't fuck it up. You get it? If you give yourself to it as best you can, it's yours. It becomes yours. It becomes whole because it's always been whole. This being so, continuous practice is undivided and not forced by you or others. What does undivided mean? Unstained, without division, without discriminations, not forced by you or others. It's whole. Roshi Norman Fisher, a highly regarded contemporary Zen teacher, makes a cogent comment about this, about continuous practice. And it really struck me, and it really pointed at the heart of this practice for us. He says, continuous practice, though I am now talking about it, and you are now listening to me and thinking about these things, cannot be identified with a concept of continuous practice. It would then become a standard, a measuring stick, which would inevitably become imposed upon you. And you would impose it upon yourself if someone else didn't impose it upon you. So it's not a thing. His words are very wise words. To not mistake the words, the descriptions, the thought for what it truly is. It's so much bigger than the words and so much more specific to you than the words and ideas of it. We inevitably judge ourselves and measure our efforts and miss the very point we're examining. It reminds me that emptiness is empty of emptiness. There's no thing called emptiness. We talk about it all the time, but there's no thing called emptiness. There's no thing called continuous practice. There's no place where it sits. Conceptually, if we think about this, it's just an endless loop. Realized, it just is what it is. There's nothing to say about it, although I'm talking about it, and you're thinking about it. There we go, right? The power of this continuous practice confirms you as well as others. That's Dogen. So how does this continuous practice confirm you? It's the practice of responsibility for our whole life. Our practice, our realization arises out of, again, our whole life. And it extends from my life to yours and your life to mine. Present right here, right now, you and I, continuous practice. And so Dogen says it means your practice affects, because it affects you and I together. Your practice affects the entire earth, the entire sky in the 10 directions. Although not noticed by others or by you, this is just how it is. What you do in Zazen, think about this. What you do in Zazen affects the entire earth, the entire sky, in the 10 directions, every place. What you do arising from Zazen, within the moments of our ordinary life, affects the entire earth, the entire sky, in the 10 directions. You can see that as a heavy, heavy weight, or you can see it as one whole way to live. We cannot measure the effects of our practice. The Buddha could not. He didn't envision us sitting here today, yet we are here because of his practice. The ancient ancestors could not. And yet, here we are. And so, it always comes down to it. What will you do with this? It's yours.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.